Hey, it's Peter here with MyFSHD. It's February 2nd, 2023, and you know what that means. Happy Groundhog Day!
It's Groundhog Day!
Groundhog time.
1,000 people freezing their butts off waiting to worship a rat.
That's right. So every February 2nd, we have tradition, I don't know, at least 130 years or so, evidently taken from Germany. I'm not sure really the logistics of it, but the deal is we have this little rodent called the groundhog here. I'm very all over the place here in at least North America. I don't know, they may be everywhere in the world. You got something like this. And legend has it that around about this time, if the groundhog sees his shadow, because, or her shadow, I guess, on a bright sunny day, then that means 6 more weeks of winter. However, if it's cloudy, the groundhog does not see a shadow, and there's going to be an early spring. And so February 2nd, it's a big, big deal. Actually, there's a movie starring Bill Murray, which is fantastic. I love the movie, Groundhog Day. Oddly enough, I can relate to it, and I can relate to it in this podcast. But actually, you know, the movie actually covers it really well. There's this place, Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. It's in the northeast of the U.S., and that's where the most famous groundhog, because you don't want to be the second most famous groundhog. There's some hack in New York City that's trying to do it. The real tried and true groundhog, Punxsutawney Phil, comes out, and they have a big deal. It's honestly, I think it's a reason to take the day off and start drinking at 7 a.m. if February 2nd happens in the middle of the week like it did this year. Everyone assembles, you get out there, people come from all over. It's actually a big party, it seems to be a pretty cool town. Check out the movie Groundhog Day with Bill Murray, and they take some creative license, probably with the fact that the day just keeps repeating over and over. But the actual events depicted in the movie, pretty much. Check it out online. So we're going to go. You think I'm making it up? You know, I always tell you, you know, I'm telling you the truth. And let's go live to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, and catch what's going on and find out, are we going to have 6 more weeks of winter, or are we going to have some snow? So this is actually what goes on. Here we go. Take it away, guys.
Ground up! Awesome!
This cane has been handed down from president to president. It gives me the ability to speak groundhog ease.
Must be what Kamala Harris.
That's how I communicate with Phil, through chirps, winks, nods. I'll be able to understand Phil so I can pick the appropriate scroll. Now I'm going to tell you a little bit about what we're about to do here. I'm going to take this cane and I'm going to knock 3 times on the door. His handler, AJ, will pull Phil from his burrow and hold him high for all to see. He will place Phil upon the stump where Phil and I will have a little talk. And I will pick the appropriate scroll and it'll be read by the vice president.
Oh, this is more secure than our elections.
If it is shadow I see, it'll be 6 more weeks of winter there will be. No shadow, an early spring. Wow, biased crowd. Gentlemen, are you ready? Daybreaker, please place the royal red carpet. Mr. Vice President, will you place the scrolls? Gentlemen, gather around.
This is essentially the Board of Elections in Philadelphia doing the daylighting
now,
for Groundhogs, Groundhog Day.
It's a tradition that we will shout, Phil, 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 Phil. Phil, 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 Phil,
remember, everybody's voting for an early spring. But we got to see where the money is. Where's the money? The money's going to go for, what do you think? I'm guessing the money's going on 6 more weeks.
There he is. Punxsutawney Phil, ladies and gentlemen.
There he is. Oh boy, you check him out online. It's the only time you'll see a groundhog without tire tracks to him. Looking pretty grumpy, I gotta tell you. Looking grumpy. I don't think this bodes well for an early spring. I don't know. That's my gut feeling here. This dude looks like he wants to go back to bed. Okay, they got the two scrolls sitting in front of them, and everyone's staring at them. Two white scrolls of paper with blue ribbons are in front, and the guy just pointed at one. That dude that's just been talking just pointed at him. I mean, he looks totally uninterested. But
Mr. President, we have
one for him, it looks like, for me. I don't know. Again, I'm not sure if the will of the groundhog is going to be represented here, but we're not going to storm the Capitol, though. Let's see what they say.
Hear ye, hear ye. Now on this February 2nd, Punxsutawney Phil, the seer of seers, was awakened from his wintry nap at dawn on Gobbler's Knob. Phil looked to the skies and then, speaking in groundhoggese, directed this President Dunkel to the proper scroll, which reads, I see the morning has brought the finest people. I see their bravery and spirit. The time has come, I can feel it, the excitement, I can hear it. I see the folks with gray in their hair, and I see the kids all young and scrawny. Their eyes and cheeks aglow from the cold, clean air of sweet Punxsutawney. I see that everyone knows their part, and I am merely the sage. But above all else, I see a shadow on my stage. And so, no matter how you measure, it's 6 more weeks of winter weather.
All right, so there you have it, 6 more weeks of winter. I guess we could only hold them to that in Pennsylvania. I don't know, it's the whole country. It doesn't really matter because, you know, first off, actually, if you look back at the history, Phil's only right 36% of the time. So what that means is if they could teach him to flip a coin, he'd be doing better. He'd actually be doing better. Oddly enough, the weather people are actually only right 60% of the time on the same note. They're not doing a whole hell of a lot better than flipping a coin either, but they get paid a bit more than Phil. But, you know, is a longer winter matter? I don't know. We're always in the lab. So, maybe there's a better way to look at it.
When Chekhov saw the long winter, he saw a winter bleak and dark and bereft of hope. Yet we know that winter is just another step in the cycle of life. But standing here among the people of Punxsutawney and basking in the warmth of their hearths and hearts, I couldn't imagine a better fate than a long and lustrous winter. From Punxsutawney, it's Phil Connors. So long.
All right. Well, there you go. A little piece of Americana. You know, I know a lot of our MyFS HD podcast listeners are outside the U.S. And we'd like to have some fun. It's funny. I'm always kind of surprised when international visitors come. And I don't know, maybe it's the same in your country, whatever. You know, there's so much about the U.S. that's in movies. I look online, you guys make fun of us all the time and for everything that we do as Americans, which is actually fine. We make fun of ourselves too. But a lot of it is actually, a lot of what you see in movies, people are still shocked that it's true. So, yes, that's Groundhog Day. It's always like, people, you know, what do you want to do? You're in the U.S. What do you want to do? You want to go to In-N-Out Burger. Really? Fast food burger? I mean, I guess it's a pretty good burger. It's in the movies, though. So Big Lebowski, got to go. Got to take Donnie to the In-N-Out Burger, right? Yeah, my sister's first husband was Britain. I guess he is British, not a husband anymore. He came to the U.S. in the 90s. He wanted to have TV dinners and watch Roseanne. That tells you how old. He's like, let's sit down and get a TV tray and sit in front of the TV and watch Roseanne, you know. And I went in to get some Hungry Man fried chicken or Salisbury steak. And that's what I liked as a kid, Salisbury steak. I taste the Jones household. He wanted to eat Chinese out of those little white carryout boxes that we have that we take for granted, which I guess you don't have in other countries, I guess. Because of the movie Stakeout. It's like, wow, they're eating Chinese out of these things. I got to get one of these. It's just like so easy. It's like, wow, it's really easy to entertain you guys when you come to visit. Anyway, we have a good time. All right. So we are going to talk about some pig stuff, some pig cells and a pig paper that was published recently. Came out of my lab and Stephen Tapscott's lab, collaboration on the pigs. We're going to talk about that. That'll be the science we're going to get to. But first I want to, you guys know that we were up at the Friends of FSH Research auction and gala up in just outside Seattle last weekend and had a great time. You know, the Friends of FSH Research is one of our favorite foundations. I think they just do, historically, they have done so much with their funding. They don't, you know, they're not the biggest organization. Well, it turns out that big organizations are really inefficient and really misguided, turns out. But they've just, you know, Rick and Terry Colella, they've funded just some of the most impactful research of any foundation out there, even though others may take credit for their work. And I still think that they're the best, just absolutely the best. You know, we also like the Chris Carino Foundation in New York, the other side of the country. And then it was really good to see some of our friends up there. I got to see Amanda, got to finally meet some of y'all in person. You know, Amanda, hadn't seen Andrea for about 3 years. Then we hung out, we had dinner with Zeb and Rose, and then got to Michael and Tamara came all the way from Toronto for the event, you know, drawing in people. It's not just a Pacific Northwest crowd. If you want to fund the best research, you can donate anytime to Friends of FSH Research too. You don't have to just do it at the gala. You know, we got a oil painting, which we have hanging up now in our living room, an original oil painting that was donated, which we love. We always get cool stuff. We saw Shireen up there, and then Carolyn, got to finally meet Carolyn, and just a lot of people. Neil Camarda was there with Kathy. Now, Neil's head of FSHD Canada Foundation. Now, if you're in Canada, that is you might be the only one to donate to in Canada. I guess there's maybe a Muscular Dystrophy Association, but Neil Camarda, unsung hero of FSHD research around the world. Man, he's got a special skill set that allows him to negotiate some difficult personalities like me and Chip and others. But you know what? He gets things done better than anybody out there, man. And you know what? When he puts his money where his mouth is too, he funds stuff. And their foundation funds a ton of stuff. Doing some real, and a lot of it behind the scenes that you guys don't really know about or know how impactful it's going to be. But it was really always good to catch up with Neil and his wife, Kathy. So yeah, it was a great time. We had a great time up there. See, we get out of the lab. But one of the things that came up was people are just kind of a little get concerned. They said, oh, wow, in your last podcast, you know, you called, you sounded kind of crazy. You know, they're like, are you okay? Are you doing fine? You know, a couple of people are like, you know, normally people just wave it off. Yeah, it's Peter being Peter. He just flies off the handle. He just whatever, says whatever. Actually, I don't really ever fly off the handle. It might sound like I do. But actually, everything I say, especially on the podcast, because it's recorded, you can always go back. It's infinite on the internet. I think very carefully about everything that I say. General topics, maybe not how I say it, but the general idea. Very calculated, actually. I know who's listening. you're paying for people to listen. if you're fundraising for some of these places. I mentioned that SolveFSHD, this matters actually when I get to the pig talk. SolveFSHD is $100 million dumpster fire, big picture dumpster fire, $100 million, maybe it's a $97 million dumpster fire. I don't know, rounding error, big number. I don't know how much, maybe he's going to bail before he, but right now, dumpster fire. That's the take home message. And we're not working with them. They have not funded anything in our lab. They have not funded, and it's fine. They don't have to. We actually haven't asked them to. The only thing we've approached about funding is MRI for the pigs. And, the way that organization is being run, with the micromanagement, the control, and I honestly believe they're not genuine in what they say that they're planning to do, at least from a leadership standpoint, it's a bad deal. It's not what's best for the field to work with them. It's not best for us. It's not best for moving therapeutics forward. It's not best for moving tools forward. It's not best for you all. Okay. So you say, how can $100 million be bad? I'm just hoping it ain't, it ain't gonna be good. It's pretty clear. I'm just hoping it doesn't get in the way and make things worse than it would be. But don't worry about it. It's nothing, we don't need their money. Just like we don't need money from the FSHD Society, right? Those are two. So the two big organizations we don't work with for the same reason, absolutely for the same reason, which is complete failure of leadership, not aligned with us on direction, meaning we believe that you should be responsive to the needs of the FSHD community. And we believe the best way to do that is through making technology available to everybody, not just your friends, not just the companies that you invest in. And the best way to do that is, honestly, I don't trust these people. I do not trust SolveFSHD, and I do not trust the FSHD Society, and I have solid reasons not to. This is not just a gut feeling, although it's a gut feeling too. I'm big about my gut feelings. So sometimes you meet people, I can't. And then this has got nothing to do with Chip. I think Chip's a good guy. I think he means well, but he just swung and missed on his leadership position for executive director. And in my opinion and in my experience, complete, utter disaster. And we will not work with them. Okay. But don't fret. People are like giving me crap. They're like, oh, you're crazy. And it's like, we've turned down opportunities to work with people all the time, companies, foundations. We are we get stuff done. We're going to get stuff done, come hell or high water. We will. So nothing, is it going to take a little bit longer? Maybe, but maybe not. One thing that's clear, SolveFSHD ain't in a hurry. They sure as heck are not in a hurry. So just a little heads up if you're listening, Jeff, don't you dare come complaining about falling down or that you're losing muscle mass, because you guys ain't doing anything to speed things up. That's for damn sure. But besides that, I'm just hopeful that they eventually will get their act together, figure it out. Maybe some of this money will actually be used for good. We're always open to change. But right now, under the current regime, no way, man. Mark Stone on steroids, boy. I tell you, Mark only dreams he could do so much damage to the field. Anyway, just waste money at record pace. So anyway, we're not dealing with them, and that's all. I'm just going to leave it at that. I thought about doing a whole podcast on laying out my case on why I'm not going to work with them, but you know what? Screw it. We have dedicated our entire professional careers to FSHD. We have taken out home loans against our house. Secondly, we've taken out home equity loans to fund our research. I have taken salary cuts to fund our research. Takiko has worked for free for several years in the lab full time so that we could further our research. We have made our mouse models, put them in Jackson Lab, made them available to every competing lab and pharma and biotech in the world without filing IP. We have put 118 cell lines in the Coriel repository. We did all the work for that way below cost in order to make those freely available. We're making other cell lines freely available. We're doing the no cost research testing for everyone around the world and everyone in the US.
And the reason it's no cost is because we're in control of it. Because I got to tell, because the foundation that want to put be in control of it, they want to use it as a moneymaker. They want to charge you. Okay, we're being responsible. So we're walking the walk. You're just going to have to trust us that not working with Solve FSH, not working with FSH Society is us holding to the high standards on what we believe is best for the FSHD field, best for moving therapeutics forward. And if you don't trust us, okay, I don't care. Screw you. Cram of the walnuts, because you know what? That's what we're doing anyway. You don't have a say in the matter. I'm just keeping you open to what's going on. So those of you telling me to suck it up and try to get money from them, nope, it ain't worth the cost. But there's always the strings attached, and we're not doing it. Not doing with it. You know what? They need us. We don't need them. Okay. All right. So, all right. Sorry. I didn't mean to go so long on that. It's just like, all right. So we're going to talk pigs, man. So we're going to talk. So, you know, that actually, you know, many of you may know that we started a pig project a few years ago. The field had been talking for years about making an FSHD, large animal model. And no one would do a damn thing about it. No one would fund it. No one would do it. Finally, we just said, screw it. We're going to make pig. We're going to make a mini pig model using the Gertigen. And again, I'm saying that wrong. But Gertigen, it's a mini pig. The max is out at about 30, 35 kilograms. You know, the typical biomedical research pig is a Yucatan pig. And those things get up to like 400, 500 pounds. They're just unwieldy. They cost a fortune. They cost a fortune to feed. They cost a fortune to house. And they cost a fortune to dose with your therapeutic. Think about this. You're testing a therapeutic because something bigger than a person. You know, a mouse is 25 to 35 grams, maybe a chunky mouse, and we'll call it an American mouse, might be 40 grams. you know, a person, you know, we'll just use my, I don't know what I am in kilograms. We'll go with I'm 170 pounds. You know, I could be, you know, an adult is going to be what you're dosing in FSHD. And, that's a big jump. That's a big jump for therapeutic dose, getting proper dosing. Also, you know, mouse musculature is just very different than human musculature. You know, large animal, just the force, the circulation system, and the way that therapeutics, the biodistribution of therapeutics in a large animal, it'd be much more similar to human than they are going to be in mouse. Mouse just are insanely regenerative, actually, and they're tremendously long. There's so many things about a mouse that you can learn a lot in a mouse, and they're fine for the first step, but a large animal model is just really important. And we felt it was so important that we made three of the models because we want to make sure that they're available for everybody. Now, my lab and my company, you know, I have a company called Renogenics that Takako and Carice and I started. It's a for-profit company. We're working with Silvera Vandermeer and Stephen Tapscott are part of the company on the board. And we're, you know, our goal is to take CRISPR inhibition to a clinic, and small molecules actually that we have to clinic. We started this because as academics, you really only have two choices. You either license out your technology to a biotech or pharma, and basically you're hands off. It's up to them to make it work. Yeah, they may ask you for advice, but you know, they can ignore you. They're basically being run by the venture caps or the investors. If you want to make sure things are done right, in your opinion, right? I'm sure the biotech said they're doing it right. But if you want to have any semblance of control, you basically have to start your own for-profit. And again, a number of people have done this. Scott Harper has done this. Catherine Wagner has done this. You're fine. We're not the only ones. You may not know about these people. A lot of people have started because, you know, for-profit companies, because it is a way to, as long as you, until the investment comes in, it's a way to maintain some semblance of control of the science to make sure it's done right. And so that's what we're doing. But, you know, we're making pig models that we don't need for that because we're also academics. In fact, first and foremost, we're academics and members of the FSHD research community and patient community, frankly. We're making models that for everybody. So we're making three pig models. And you know what? We were hoping the first one, I know some people have looked online that I guess I have it posted online or a previous episode. We said we thought it would be for the first model, the DUX4 flex model, would be done by end of 2022. It's just not ready. You know what? They're hard. We missed our deadline. That's why you don't promise deadline. That's when we anticipated. We weren't raising money on it. We weren't telling patients this is when you're going to be cured. But you know what? Science is hard and things happen that you're don't expect. And the pigs have just been harder to generate. So the motto is we have live animals, but you know, we're still sorting out the phenotype and the consistency of the model. So we don't have anything yet. We'll keep you posted. And then we also have an FSHD1 model that we're making. We only had one litter. The final construct that we're putting in, that first litter was stillborn, so we don't have those pigs. And then an FSHD2 pig coming, which is it's actually an FSHD1 plus 2 pig, and that's even taking longer. So we don't actually have any pig models available right now, contrary to what is being told about us, because people try to leverage their money against people. They're just some horrible people out there. But we don't, you know, so if you have heard that we have pig models, we're generating them. And when they're available, when they are properly made and properly characterized, they will be made available to anybody who wants them. But we don't have them yet. Okay. We'll keep you posted. The first place you'll hear about it is here. Okay. This is where we'll announce it. So if you haven't heard about it here, then people are just blowing smoke. Okay. So what is it? So there's a pig. There was a pig paper that was recently published, right? And so I know this has actually already hit some of the Facebook groups and is already kind of getting it wrong. So there's actually published today online at the Human Molecular Genetics. It says human DUX4 and porcine DUX C activate similar early embryonic programs in pig muscle cells, implications for preclinical models of FSHD. And the senior author is Stephen Tapscott. And the top first two authors who did most of the work are Yi Nip and Sean Bennett. Takiko and I are also on this paper, along with Andrew Smith. Okay, so it's a collaboration between our lab and Steve Tapscott's lab. So one of the things to note is that, you know, people, everyone thinks I'm horribly arrogant, and we know everything, because someone's commented that I just seem to call everybody idiots. No, I just call the idiots idiots. There's a lot of brilliant people out there. I should point out Stephen Tapscott, one of the greatest minds in FSHD research, muscle biology, muscle gene regulation, cancer, developmental biology. Brilliant, you know. And guess so what? You know, we seek out the best people and we work with them. We don't work with who we're told to work with. Okay. That's one of the issues with Solve FSHD, actually. They don't give a damn who the best people are. They just want you to work with their friends. And so that they can all make money. It's just a con job to get all of Chip's money away from them. Chip will figure it out. He's a smart guy. But anyway, this is, we do collaborate with people. And so one of the first things I did when decided to do the pigs was I contacted Stephen Tapscott and Sylvair Vandermeerl. And I said, hey, take a look at, we're making pigs. What do you think? And they said, great. Oh my God, that's amazing. And it's a great idea. How can we help? You know, these are people that I respect scientifically and I trust as researchers and are similarly aligned with our lab on doing what's best for the FSHD field and to get therapeutics to clinic. These are people who have invested significant parts of their scientific careers, just like us, in the FSHD space. Huge contributors. And so, you know, we work with the best people, okay, that can be trusted. Okay. And we will not compromise on that. Okay. And we will not work with foundations that demand we compromise on who we work with. In fact, actually one of the reasons we were thrown out of US Medical School is because we wanted to maintain these two collaborations with, totally different project, nothing with pigs, but you know, when the UMass Medical School Wellstone program demanded that we stop collaborations they didn't approve of, one of them, of course, was Bob Block, but the other ones were Stephen Tapscott and Sylvair Vandermeerl. And we said, no, we're not going to stop collaborating with the best people in the world. I mean, it's just wrong. Why would you stop? Why would you not want to work with the best people in the world and collaborate? Jesus Christ. Anyway, we do. We always do. So this is a pig project. So say I just told you now, though, we don't have pigs. How can there be a pig paper that's published when we don't have pigs? Well, we thought, we knew it was going to take 2 or 3 years to make pigs. People just don't get it. You just can't just order a mouse off the shelf. You can't just order a pig off the shelf, especially when it's FSHD. Okay, now just think about it. Now, let's think about the case of Duchenne muscular dystrophy, okay? Duchenne muscular dystrophy, that's mutations in the dystrophin gene that lead to Duchenne muscular dystrophy or Becker muscular dystrophy. pretty much every organism down to like roundworms, C. elegans, nematodes, they have dystrophin. Dystrophin is a highly conserved gene that's involved in muscle function. It has in muscle signaling and muscle integrity. Okay, dystrophin's in also in nerves. It's also in almost every tissue of the body, right? You need dystrophin. Okay, so if you want to make a Duchenne pig, well, you just mutate the porcine dystrophin gene and you get a Duchenne pig. What mutation do you want? You could also humanize the dystrophin gene. That's a different thing. Okay, most other muscular dystrophies, if you want, you know, if you want a Huntington's pig, you know, you can put it in a repeat into the Huntington's gene. If you want whatever neuromuscular disease, whatever human disease you want to study, pigs are pretty human. Their genomes are very human, okay? But not FSHD. Do you remember with the mouse? We couldn't do this in the mouse either. The Duchenne mouse is a mutation in the mouse dystrophin gene, okay? FSHD, the FSHD region, the DUX4 gene and the D4Z4 array are uniquely human. Especially in the context for FSHD. Now there are DUX family genes in all placental animals. Okay, but they're not DUX4. And so that's one of the questions. One of the questions, you know, Stephen is one of the world leaders in DUX family genes, and what is the normal developmental function of the DUX family genes, including DUX4, but a DUX4 being human. DUX-C is the kind of the ancestral DUX gene. You have mouse ducks, right? You have elephant ducks. You have aardvark ducks, you know, whatever. You have groundhog ducks, you know, you have all these, they all have a DUX that does the same thing, but no one had actually studied or even identified a porcine DUX gene. So we want to make a model of FSHD in pigs. What can we do ahead of time that would be useful, right? Instead of doing things in series, we're going to do things in parallel. So we're going to have to put the human DUX4 gene and the human D4Z4 arrays into the pig genome. This is going to take time. And we also know that these are highly toxic when they're expressed. We know this from the mouse work. It took us years to do this. So it could take a long time, and it is taking a long time to properly put these in and to engineer the pig genome so that they can actually have the human genome parts for FSHD. Okay. And how to do this and what do you need? It gets complicated. We don't kind of, you know, we're basing it off what we know from mice, but you know, we don't know what we're going to get. Right. The other thing when you work in mouse models is you can do inducible models. And so our Flex DUX4 mouse is, right, it's tamoxifen inducible. Right. Well, you do that by mating to a mouse that has a tamoxifen inducible recombinase called Cre. Okay. You don't have Cre driver lines of pigs. Right. Nobody's ever made one. It doesn't exist. So you have to do that too. So you have to make all the components. Right. And so so it's going to be complicated. So it has been complicated, but it's moving and things are working really well, but not as fast as we'd like. And they're not moving faster because, you know, we everything's expensive and Takako is doing most of the work in our lab. But we said, what can we do ahead of time, though, so that we can start to generate the tools and the information that we'll need once these pig models of FSHD are made? And so what can we do? Well, first, let's understand, make sure that the pig's DUX, that they have a DUX family, DUX ortholog, and make sure that it functions in pigs the way that mouse DUX functions in mice and that human DUX4 functions in humans. That would be really important because this is kind of validating that this is a good mouse. You might want to do this first, but you lose a year or year and a half, right? So we're kind of doing things, you know, at the same time in parallel. Okay, then what's the next thing you want to know? Well, so what is DUX4? So DUX4, or all these DUX proteins, they are transcription factors, right? They are genes that encode proteins who function to turn on or off genes in the genome, okay? So you turn on DUX4, and then it goes and turns on a whole bunch of other genes in the genome, okay? And this will be done based on in a very sequence specific. So how do you find a gene that you regulate? Remember, DNA has CTAG, you have four bases of DNA, CTAG. And you have 3 billion of these bases in a row, right? Right. Makes you, you. And they have a particular order most of the places, you know, and in regions that are regulated. So any protein that regulates gene expression has a very specific sequence of bases that it binds. So it might be CTCGTGA, okay? And every place you see that binding site, that protein X will bind and turn on or turn off that and regulate that gene. And that's how you can turn on a gene like DUX4, and you only turn on, and then you only regulate a subset of genes, genes that have the proper DNA sequence to be regulated by DUX4, and genes that don't have that are not turned on. You know, and this is the same for any transcription factor, okay? And so now the difference is, this is where the devil's in the details. You know, mouse DUX turns on an embryonic program at the two-cell stage. So when a mouse is 2 cells old, mouse DUX is on, and it expresses this way, you know, zygotic gene expression activation. And so it just turns on a whole bunch of embryonic genes, and then DUX4 gets turned off, and those genes just go on and drive the formation of the embryo, okay? That's what happens in mouse. So it regulates, you know, several hundred genes that get turned on, and then you don't need any more because those genes are on and they're going. Okay, you've activated an embryonic program early in development. In humans, what happens? Well, this is a little bit different. It's at the 4-cell stage. So when you are 4 cells old, you express DUX4. Everybody expresses DUX4, even people who are not permissive. we can get to that later. But everybody expresses DUX4 at the 4-cell stage. And the same thing happens. You activate this embryonic program of gene expression where all these genes, hundreds of genes are turned on. Some, I guess, are turned off. And then you drive embryonic development, okay? And that's what happens. So then DUX4 gets turned off. And so you get in the 4 to 8 cell stage, on and off. And now you're driving embryonic development, okay? So what happens in FSHD? Well, in FSHD, your muscles express DUX4, and they shouldn't. It should not be expressed in your muscles. Your skeletal muscles express DUX4, and the same thing happens. You drive an embryonic program, developmental program, all these genes that are normally only expressed in the four cell stage of humans are now expressed in your muscles. Now your muscles are expressing all these genes it doesn't want, right? The thing to remember is any cell in your body, what makes that cell itself is it expresses, it contains all the proteins and gene expression that it needs, and it does not have the things that it doesn't need. It's not like you're just this big garbage pail and you just pick it and everything's expressed, right? A blood cell only expresses what it needs. A nerve cell only expresses what a nerve cell needs. A liver cell expresses what a liver cell needs. And a muscle cell expresses just what a muscle cell needs, right? And you don't express all these other things. And the reason, one, it's just not efficient, but also because they have all these gene products, all these proteins have functions. And if you're expressing something that has a function, it could be counteracting what a muscle is doing, or it could be, in this case, driving potentially immune responses to the muscles. Anyway, it screws up the muscle. If you don't have the proper component of gene expression, meaning the proper genes on and the proper genes off, then whatever cell it is doesn't work. So your muscles don't work when they have DUX4 expressed because they're expressing this early developmental program. And the consequence of this, it can be cell death, it can be oxidative stress, it could be driving immune response, all sorts of things that happen. We know all these things happen in the lab. We don't actually know downstream. We don't actually know which of these, if any of them, lead to FSHD pathology. We just know in a lab, when you express human DUX4 in a human muscle cell, there's a ton of bad stuff that happens, okay? And that's why DUX4 is the key target. Downstream of DUX4, we don't know which of those, you know, is it death by 1,000 knives or one really special knife? And it's real too hard to figure that out. So actually downstream of DUX4 could be very, very important to understand that. Okay. So now we're going to say what happens in pigs downstream of DUX4 and what happens in pigs downstream of DUX4. So to do that, the Tapscott lab, so I believe Sean Bennett was the one who did this, great postdoc up there. What he did is did some bioinformatics search. There's a lot of genome data that's out there freely available on the web. There's some pig genome data out there for Susufka. I believe that's what the pig is, the Latin name for pigs. Not exactly the Gertigen because that's a patented genome, but the Susgrofa reference genome. It did not actually have an annotated, meaning nobody had
else had prior found a Duxc gene, you know, but it's a placental animal. It should have a Duxc family member, Duxc ortholog. Okay. But you got him. Don't know till you look. Okay. So he did identify a region, and that's the first part of the paper, and was able to predict some transcripts, looking at some RNA-seq data from pre-implantation pig embryos. So it's really smart, right? This is how you do it. You look at the genome. Now, the genome, it doesn't really matter where it came from, what cell, because your genes are your genes, except for some of the immune genes. But generally, your DNA is your DNA, so pig cell DNA is going to be fine. But, you know, what else do we know about Duxc? Well, Duxc should be expressed, you know, in early embryonic stages, like 2-cell or 4-cell or 8-cell stage. So turns out there's some data available online, gene expression data, RNA-seq data that was done on 2- and 8-cell stages, okay, from pigs. And so was able to find that there is a Duxc-like gene that is expressed at the right time in pig development that you would expect a Duxc. Okay. And so then they were able to clone this out and create the ducks, the porcine ducks, PDUXC gene from this data. Okay. Turns out that it has 2 homeodomains and a carboxy terminal region that looks like other Duxc family members, including Dux4. Okay. And so it looks like it should, right? And homeodomains, these are DNA binding domains. Dux4 has 2 homeodomains, just a kind of DNA binding domain. And this is where the sequence specificity comes from and how you're going to determine which genes are going to be turned on or off, which genes are going to be regulated by the transcription factor. Okay, so let's take a look. So if you actually look at the porcine Duxc homeodomain, it is 79% similar, right, and 62% identical to the human Dux4 first homeodomain. And if you look at the second homeodomain, it's 88% similar and 68% identity. Okay, so that is remarkable between pig and that. What that says is that says there's a good chance that the DNA binding specificity of porcine Duxc and human Dux4 are going to be very similar. I mean, this is remarkable conservation of sequence between pig and human. Just as a comparison, okay, the mouse, 65% similarity and only 39% identity on homeobox 1, and 75% similarity and 63% identity on homeobox 2. And what does this matter? Well, we know what happens when you put human Dux4 in a mouse. Yes, you get a myopathic phenotype. You get a ton of genes that are misexpressed, but really only about 100 of the genes that are regulated by human Dux4 in mouse are the same ones that are regulated by human Dux4 in human. Okay, you might get about 6,000 genes are misregulated in mouse, about 6,000 genes are misregulated in human. Only 100 of them are the same ones. Okay, so that's why we say it's a you get a myopathic phenotype in mice. So what you might make the case that what's going on in mice that express Dux4 is that they're expressing a whole bunch of genes that are not normally expressed in muscle. And when that happens, you screw up muscle. Okay, and you get muscle pathology. So it's not really FSHD. It's really just a screwed up myopathic phenotype. Get immune response, you get good things happen. And that might explain why mouse muscle does not look particularly FSHD-like, right? It's not very fatty. It's fibrotic, centralized nuclei from regeneration. We know that human ducts kills, you know, does actually lead to cell death in mouse cells. But again, this is more of a non-specific kind of myopathic phenotype. Now, it doesn't matter if you're using the mouse to test Dux4 targeted therapeutics. If you have an antisense targeting Dux4 mRNA and you have the human Dux4 gene in the flex mouse like we do, and it's expressed, that's fine because it kind of doesn't matter what's downstream. If you're targeting the Dux4 protein, it really doesn't matter because you're able to eliminate it and see that you can restore a healthy mouse or you can prevent accumulation of muscle pathology. It doesn't really matter. However, if you're interested in therapeutics downstream of Dux4, then it does matter, right? If you want to target the immune system or if you want to target antioxidants or oxidative stress, regeneration, changes in muscle developmental programs, all the things downstream of duck sport. Now it's likely going to matter. And maybe mouse is not going to be the best model. In fact, where's it going to matter? Muscle building for stem cell technology, for anything that is going to say we have a dystrophic environment, we have a bad environment because of the DUX4 expression. How do we build muscle back? How do you recover muscle mass? I would make the case that mouse is probably a really bad model for that. DUX4 expressing mice, not so good. But what about pig? Maybe pig's going to be better. Well, we know that the porcine DUX4 and the human DUX4 are very similar, much more similar than mouse and human. Okay. So what happened? So what they did then is they said, okay, we need to do some work on some pig cells. Where are you going to get pig cells? Well, this is where our lab came into play. We got some muscle biopsies from wild type Gertigen pigs and some wild type Yucatan pigs, right? So we got some porcine myoblasts. And so Takako took the muscle and she made porcine skeletal muscle cell lines. Okay. They weren't available. You can't order these. These aren't online. So you have to make two. Once again, we are making the tools that are needed. So Takako made these tools. I would like to briefly say this was all funded by the Chris Carino Foundation for FSHD. I was talking with Chris and I said, you know, we're making these mouse models. And he's like, how can I help? What can I do? I said, well, we want to make some tools while we're making the models, I want to make some pig muscle cell lines, and we want to do a transcriptomic analysis, gene expression analysis of the pig muscle before the pigs are made so that we're ready. He's like, cool, I'm in, right? And get $50,000 grant from the Chris Carino Foundation to make these tools. So very thankful. You know what? I'm telling you, see, these are the people that get it, right? It's not like Hemmen and Hine. It's not shaking you down. What's in it for me? You know what's in it for him? You know, getting closer to a cure for FSHD. You know what? And you know, these other foundations that we don't work with, they ask what's in it for us. They don't mean it, what's in it for you, the community. They're saying what's in it for them personally, financially, and for their friends. Okay. They don't give a damn about you. Anyway, but Chris does, the Carino Foundation. And so they step up. They always step. They stepped up for the mouse work. Now they're stepping up for the pig work. And so Chris has funded this work. And so we made our muscle cell line, sent them up to the Tapscott lab. And so now the question is, what does the porcine DUX4 do in pig cells? And what does the human DUX4 do in pig cells? Because you know what? That's in the end. That's what we're going to do, is put the human DUX4 into the pig genome. That's what's being done. And so what Stephen Lab, they did is they have an inducible system that they've used in the past to get some really amazing data. A lot of the transcriptomic data that we have and a lot of our understanding of what human DUX4 does in human skeletal muscle, he set up that same system in his lab in the porcine muscle cells that we sent up there. And what happens? Well, if you overexpress porcine DUX4 in porcine pig muscle cells, you get an embryonic program. Okay, just so it's actually doing exactly what you expect DUX4 to do. This, so it truly is an functional orthologue, meaning it's essentially the same gene, it's just gene performing the same function as mouse DUX and as human DUX4. So we got the right gene, so that's great. And it does what you expect. Okay, and this is good because now we know that its DNA binding domain is very similar. So got RNA-seq and identified all the genes that are activated. And so what actually is activated? You know, it turns out the same types of genes, right? Things like MBD3L5, PRAME12, TRIM43, Zscan5b, right? So these are, you know, how do you find these? A lot of these genes were not annotated in pig. These are genes that are biomarkers in FSHD. So if you were part of the Fulcrum trial and they took your biopsy, these are some of the gene expression data that they were looking at to see if they were effectively shutting down DUX4. These are the transcription. These are the gene mRNA targets of DUX4. Right? The genes are activated by DUX4 in human cells. Turns out, these are the same genes that are active, that the porcine homologs are activated by the pig DUX4 in pig cells. So it's really doing the same. So now you're getting the same biomarkers there. So then what happens? You know, but we're not really studying pigs. We're validating them as a model for FSHD. So then you go and say, what happens when you put human DUX4 into porcine myoblasts? And it turns out you get something that's remarkably similar. Okay, it's actually remarkably similar, so way better than mouse. Okay, human DUX4 expressed in pig muscle cells compared to pig DUX4 expressed in pig muscle cells compared to FSHD cells, right? Human DUX4 in human cells. And they're lining up really well, way better than mouse. Okay, strong correlation between the genes induced by PDUX-C and human DUX4 and porcine cells, you know, so yeah, a little bit lower levels of induction, but what they, you know, what we're able to identify by annotating, essentially identifying the pig DUX4 target genes really looks good. Okay, really, really looks good. The overall summary of the data, I'm not going to get into all the Pearson coefficients and all these things and how many genes. You can get the paper. Paper's available online. But basically, the summary is that the data demonstrate that human DUX4 and porcine DUX-C activate similar transcriptional programs in pig myoblasts. And you know what? This is fantastic news, because what that means is a pig is not just going to be a great model for testing DUX4 targeted therapeutics in a large animal model. It means downstream of DUX4, we have a chance now to have a more FSHD-like environment in your muscles to actually use the model to study how to recover your strength, because that's what we want to do. We want to stop the destruction and get your muscles back. I don't want to just leave you where you are and freeze where you are. I want you to come back to strength, either regain strength, new strength, whatever. We want to get Kate skiing again, man. You know, I want T climbing up mountains again. You know, that's what we want, you know, and get everybody going. And so you got to get your muscle back. And so this means that there's really good news that pig is going to actually be a better model for FSHD than mouse, much better model than mouse. Okay. Turns out, give you a little sneak peek. We have looked at some of the histopathology of some of our pig. You know, I told you we don't have the models really made. We've had a couple of live animals born, and we've had some stillbirths that we've been able to analyze what's going on. So you get a feeling for what does the DUX4 in, you know, what does a pig, a developing pig muscle that has expressed very little amount of DUX4, what does it look like? And I got to tell you, it looks amazingly FSHD. Oh my God. If I show this to a pathologist, they might say, wow, my goodness, that's an FSHD. I mean, you have the immune infiltration, a lot of fat, man. These things are going to taste good. I tell you, man, we're going to have a second side business here, man, making, how do you make a tastier pig. You know, all this time people have gone through trying to get fat out of pigs. Let me tell you, give them a little DUX4, you get fat into pig muscle. But why is this good? Because you have a lot of fat in your muscles. Your muscles are turning to fat. They're kind of fibrotic, but really it's the fat infiltration. This is what we see by MRI. And so it tells me that for our muscle building strategies and our muscle recovery of, you know, strength recovery strategies that we're going to be using, we can essentially induce FSHD in the pig model. And what this data tells us is that it's going to activate the same type of cascades that lead to the same type of pathology that you have, except it's going to be in a pig. And we're going to be able to test some of these ways that we can get your muscle strength back in an FSHD environment. What do we got to do? How do we, you know, can you just stick stem cells into an FSHD environment and have them make muscle? I don't know. I doubt it. But once you've shut down DUX4, I mean, if you don't shut down DUX4, I'm pretty sure it's not going to work. But I'm not sure it'll work even if you do shut down DUX4. But this model will let you know. This is what's so great about the model. This is why I thought there was so much lack of vision in not wanting to fund the model. I mean, when Jamshid said we see, you know, they have no interest whatsoever in supporting a large animal model of FSHD. You're just like, these guys are sorry, Carolyn. These guys are idiots. You gotta call it as you see it. I mean, I don't know any other way to say it. How can you possibly think a large animal model of FSHD is not a good idea if you have any understanding of what the goal is. And the goal is to stop ducks, have a large animal model so we can not have failures in clinical trials on therapeutics, but also have a large animal model so that we can get you your muscle strength back. That's what we want to do. It's two parts. That's why Ben's in my lab. Ben's in my lab because he wants to work on projects on the pig, their muscle cell back. But this also is why we're running into problems because, you know, we're characterizing these by gene expression. These were cells. So again, these were just wild type pig cells, wild type meaning they're just normal pigs, not FSHD pigs, not transgenic pigs. These cells were just cells isolated from pig muscle biopsies, isolated by Takiko, engineered to express DUX4, the same as we're going to do, or said we are doing in our pig models. And we're just learning all we can before the models are finished about what DUX4 expression does in pigs. Okay. So the pigs are not done, but we have the tools, we have the transcriptomes. We already know what some of the biomarkers are going to be. And most importantly, we know that downstream of the pig, downstream of human DUX4 and pig is going to be more human. No, not exactly human-like. Not exactly. Much more human-like than mouse, though. Way better than mouse. And like I said, the histology is really panning out to say that it does look like FSHD muscle. You say, oh, then make the pigs available. Again, we have ends of one. We are making these available. But what we really need is MRI. And this kind of is where everything hit the fan. So thinking of, you know, what is the, you know, the, if you're in the MOVE study, right, there's the MOVE Plus study, right, where they add MRI, full body MRI. You know, one of the things you've been hearing about in all the space is the need for biomarkers for FSHD. Right now, what people have looked at and what they looked at in the Fulcrum phase 2b trial are they had to take biopsies of your muscles and look at the gene targets of DUX4. That's these MBD3, 5L, 3L5, Z-scan, some of the genes I just mentioned, right? And they didn't see any change, right? Which would indicate to most scientists that they didn't shut down DUX4. But that sucks, right? You got to have a biopsy. Biopsy before you take the drug, biopsy after you take the drug. You're already losing muscle. You don't need biopsy. That sucks, right? You want a circulating biomarker, ideally, maybe something in your blood, right? Or something in your urine, something where you don't have to take muscle biopsies. Well, the other possibility is MRI, right? You can actually get, if any of you have had a full body MRI, you can see that you can see a lot of muscle pathology prior, you know, while you're still very functional. Right, you have a lot of compensation going on, but you can see the inflammation, you can see the fat infiltration, you can see these signals on the MRI that indicate that your muscles are not as healthy as we'd like them to be, and that this progresses over time. And there'll be some more papers coming out on this, but you can do this anyway. Actually, my friend Ian down in Australia just published a paper in November on pediatric cases, right? You can do this with kids, right? You can put, I think, like 10 or 11 kids through MRI and a collaborator. We do the methylation analysis. We're actually one of our big pediatric projects that we're working on in Australia and in Melbourne, the hospital down there in Melbourne. You know, you can do this in kids, you know, it's non-invasive. You can do it over time. You do it every couple of months, whatever. You can actually track the progression of the pathology and also potentially the efficacy of the therapeutic by seeing, you know, the changes on MRI or lack of changes, or maybe muscle recovers and gets better. So this is going to be really important for therapeutics, but it's also really important for muscle building and getting your muscle back, building everything back, because the last thing you want to do is if you're trying to build a muscle is come in with a needle biopsy or an open biopsy and take a big chunk out, cause all this damage, cause all this inflammation, cause all these problems. I mean, come on, man, you don't want to do that. You want MRI. And that's what you need to do. Whether it's stem cells or some of this technology that we're working on that are some other proprietary components and some of our collaborators have, you want to be able to, you know, inject this and then track how it's affecting muscle health non-invasively and repeatedly over time. Okay, so we need to have MRI. This is actually one of the things we didn't consider when we first did the pig models. So we first did the pig models. Right. It was about $2.5 million thing to get three models, paid for predominantly by patients. The William R. Lewis family kicked in $1 million. Chip's family, Chip and Summer Wilson kicked in $1 million. This is, you know, a couple of years ago before Solve FSHD, their family kicked in. FSHD Canada put in some money. The Sheridan family put in some money. FSHD Global in Australia put in some money. Chris Carino, I just told you about Carino's donation, not for making the models, but actually he funded making these tools in this paper, and he's actually credited in the paper and the acknowledgments for doing it. Very grateful. And so, you know, this was really, you know, a large effort, but we didn't have MRI, right? And yeah, it was a few years ago, so we didn't, you know, we're not completely we don't have perfect forward vision. We make the models, but we get, now we can do MRI. We can actually take the pigs and we can go to a human hospital and use a human MRI and actually do MRI. And that's actually right now what we're setting up to do. The problem is you just got to squeeze, you know, get, I hate the patients come first. This ain't Animal Farm. Okay. It's not two legs bad, four legs good. Okay. It's actually, you know, they don't, have, and actually in the end, well, we check out the end of Animal Farm. It doesn't work. Anyway. So we're not, but we can get in and we're going to do that. But what we'd really like to do is to set up MRI on site at the contract research organization that we're making the pigs with. And so we've been trying to round up funding for this. And this is where, you know, we kind of hit some problems because you say, oh, well, this is exactly what something like Solve FSHD would be all about. And you would think so, right? How can Chip use his money to speed things up, relieve bottlenecks, do something for the field, make, you know, this seems like the poster child project for what Solve FSHD would be all about, right? Nope, not at all. Not interested. Well, they are interested. They're interested in pigs. They're interested in MRI. They're also interested in being in complete control of it and interested in actually starting a company to make a profit out of this. Again, I'm not against people making profit. But essentially what's going on is they basically want to just basically take over to, yeah, just, I mean, the hell with us, right? What do we know? You know, and so they've just, you know, the idea is that they are not going to fund. Now, of course, it's a bad business decision to fund this. This is actually just using money, you know, venture philanthropy. This would be using the philanthropy part of venture philanthropy, would be to essentially pay for an MRI setup so that all of companies in the, you know, doing pig work have access to MRI on the pig models, right? So no return, the return on investment, it's philanthropy, would be you're speeding along therapeutic development, right? That's supposedly what they're all about. But the thing to remember, the way that Solve is set up with their executive director is it's really all venture, not so high in the philanthropy, really high in the venture. What's in it for me? What's in it for my friends? How can we make money out of this? The hell with the field. The hell what's good for the field. How can I support my friends? You think I'm being harsh? I'm actually not being harsh at all. Let me tell you something. Not being harsh at all, because this is actually what's going on. So why would someone do this? Well, one of the things that Solve has done is they have funded a stem cell company that was started by Catherine Wagner. V-Day Therapeutics. You guys all know Catherine. She was a neurologist at Johns Hopkins and now has gone on to work for Roche. And she's really good friends with the executive director of Solve, even became an advisor for Solve. She's also the person who actively tried to crush our Xenograft project as a member of the SAB of the FSHD Society. If it was up to her, Bob Bloch's Xenograft model would not exist. And quite honestly, her actions are what led to us being thrown out of UMass or asked to leave UMass under threat of being thrown out. You know, because again, you know, we go back to the Xenograft Bob podcast with Bob, right? So this is who Solve is in bed with, right? They have a $10 million investment in her stem cell company, who's going to do stem cell therapy for neuromuscular diseases, which may or may not be any good in 10 or 20 years, but now they have a vested interest in a particular technology and they want pigs. Well, guess what? This stem cell company needs pigs. Now they'll get pigs from us. We're working with a contract research organization. And when the pigs are available, the fact that I have complete disdain for Catherine, I'll still give her company the pig. They can have the pigs because, you know, we don't get in anybody's way. Even people that have tried to crush us, we'll still allow them because, you know, that's the right thing to do. Everybody gets it, but
it's interesting because there's other technology for muscle building that Solve has absolutely no interest in funding or supporting. And it doesn't make any sense to me because I'm just like, well, there's you know, this idea, you know, you always hear shots on goal and high risk, high reward. You know, how are you going to get, you know, you got to take some chances. It's like, wait a minute. So really, it seems like to get funding from Solve, you just need to be friends with the executive director. It's not a science decision. And that's clearly not a science decision. Right. And then you start saying, okay, well, now you have this competing technology that actually is scientifically better, more sound, and more applicable, and more readily, I mean, ready to go. Some FDA-approved treatments for other indications that if we could show that they work for FSHD, you'd actually have something, so you'd be faster, better, you know, but it may or may not work. But the stem cells, I mean, those are light years away, and they may never work either. Ask around, take a poll. But they don't want to fund it. So it doesn't make any sense. Actually, it is mind-boggling why they make these. Again, it's not my decision, not my money. But just as a scientist looking in, I say, wow, how the hell do you, all I can, you know. Well, one thing we do know is this technology would compete with their friends and their current investment. And so now you say, okay, so those of you who are told me back in the beginning that I'm an idiot. Now, remember, I'm an idiot now because I'm not sucking up to Solve to try to get their money for my pigs. I should go and, try to play nice with them. I should be Switzerland. Go look up Switzerland and see what the hell they really did during World War II, by the way. Those of you who think Switzerland's a good idea. Yeah, make money from both sides and enable evil. But anyway, we're not going to be Switzerland. We actually stand up for what's right. And we can recognize things that are bad for the community. Okay, so if Solve and their friends and the company SolveX that they set up were to actually be in charge of the pigs, were able to actually be what they're trying to be, which is the source where you have to go to get pigs, you have to get your pig MRI, and all the companies in the world, everyone has to go to them. That's their vision, that's their grand plan. These are the, again, it's sort of the kind of a nerd's version of James Bond villain. They're gonna, you know, you have to go to them to get your get your therapy tested in pigs. Well, now they can actually pick and choose who they're going to. Do you think they're going to let the competition use the pigs, or do you think they're just going to give them to their friends? They can say what they want. They can swear all they want. I'm swear on the Bible. I will make it freely available. It's already freely available. When I have properly characterized the pigs and we say these pigs are done, ready to go, they will then, anybody in the world, they're not promising anything, right? The pigs, you know, we have FSHD experts working with pig experts, motivated with a long history of making tools, making novel tools, making the important tools, and then making them available to everybody. And they want to step in and say, no, we want to shut that down. We want to give it to our friends who don't know a damn thing about FSHD and they don't know a damn thing about pigs, but they think they see an opportunity to make a pile of money, con chip out of his money because they're good friends with the executive director of his foundation. This is going to be bad for the field. It's going to be bad for therapeutics. It's going to be bad for you. Okay. And you know what? None of them got FSHD. None of them have FSHD in their family. I don't think any of them give a damn about FSHD. They're looking at this $100 million and saying, how can we get as much of it as we can? And you know how you do it? You suck up to the executive director of the foundation. Chip made a huge mistake putting this person in charge. And, you know, hopefully he'll see the light and fix it. But until he does, we're not working with them. Okay. They offer nothing but headaches. And as far as I'm concerned, the way they have dealt with our pig project, the way they've dealt with us, they've been, they've gone behind the back. They've done underhanded. They do not act and function as people that are trustworthy. So we are not working with them. So don't get upset. Don't give me grief. You know what? People say, you know what? People want to say, I'm the problem. Am I the problem? Well, I guarantee, you know what? If you're dishonest and you don't have what's best in mind for the FSHD community, if you're not really on board and aligned with us and doing everything in your power to get therapeutics to everybody as fast as possible, you're damn right I'm a problem.
Who are you then?
Just the fly in the ointment, Hans. The monkey in the wrench. The pain in the ass.
All right. Well, I do like being a pain in the ass. No, we just hold people accountable. That's all it really is. It's about accountability. And, you know, that's part of the deal we make of being part of the FSHD community. Okay. You know, just
we got to get this done and either help out or get out of the way, right? But we sure as hell are not. No amount of money is going to change us from the mission. We're not making a deal, okay? People who know me, trust me, we're not making a deal. Anyway, so I'm gonna a little bit of our what is it, our pop culture? Sorry, a little bit of the pop culture that we do. You heard about it. It started with Groundhog Day. And so now is it pretty clear why this is Groundhog Day? Why that? Not just because it's Groundhog Day, but also, you know, the same. If you watch the movie, it's the same thing over and over. Right? It's always Groundhog Day, but you just keep reliving the same day. And sometimes that's honestly, this is a running joke in the lab and has been for years when we deal with people. It's like, it's just always the same thing. It's always the same. You know, whether it's the FSHG Society with our mouse model, Solve with the pig model. But it's not always bad. You know what? You want to know what's also Groundhog Day? Chris Carino Foundation comes through for us and comes through for you. That's also Groundhog Day because they always come through, right? FSHD Canada Foundation, they always come through. Neil Camarda, that dude, he comes through for everybody. You know what? Friends of FSH Research, they're looking to continue funding some of this pig work with Stephen Tapscott. I don't want to skew their SAB decision, but fund it. You really ought to. It's really good stuff. But you know what? They will. I'm sure they will. You know why? Because they always come through, right? People who understand the goal of advancing technology to advance therapeutics. We don't know what's going to work. You know, is the problem going to be solved by 2025? Maybe, maybe not. Can we solve it better? I'm sure we can. We're all very hopeful, but yet, you know what? I honestly am an idiot. I don't know. I know most of the things, therapeutic approaches that are out there, there are a lot of them actually have a shot to work. I mean, you can actually draw a line on a lot of them, not all of them. There are some that don't have a path to clinic, but there are a lot of different approaches. And also the devil's in the details. A lot of like antisense, you know, a dozen antisense companies out there, you know, maybe the tweak here, tweak there on how you're going to increase stability, decrease costs, maybe increase uptake, decrease toxicity, decrease immune response. There's all these little variables that come into play. And which one's the right one? I don't know. But you know what? You got to give them all the tools to test. Okay. You can't strangle the field by just holding the tools for your friends. Okay. And that's what these places want to do. Trust me, you want to check out how, look for an organization and see if they have a commercialization officer. Are you walking and rolling to pay the salary of a commercialization officer? Because let me tell you, once you start playing favorites, once you start financially backing certain companies and not backing other companies or commercializing things that the foundation funds, now all of a sudden you've totally changed the playing field. Are you really doing what's best for the field? Or are you doing what's best for your bottom line, right? Return on investment should be curing FSHD. That's return on investment. And if people don't understand that, then get out of the space. Okay. That's truly the thing. Because you know what? If you do cure FSHD and you're a biotech or a pharma, you're going to make plenty of money anyway. Okay. And if your technology sucks, you know what? You shouldn't be making money. Move on to a different disease. Or if maybe your technology is great, but it just doesn't work in this space, that's fine too. Let's find out, fail fast, and then go on to whatever it is that you're doing. Okay. But we can't let people suck up technology, suck up resources, try to be in the game to enrich themselves and their friends. Right. I mean, maybe we take it too seriously. Another reason to make fun of us, you know? I mean, I understand you guys can laugh and say no one ever do that. You know what? I can dream. You know what? I can dream. You know what? Cindy Williams just died this week. Really sad to hear. Speaking of dreaming, she's part of the team Laverne and Shirley. Great show from the 70s. About two tough-as-nails women making it on their own, trying to make their dreams come true. The big ragu, Carmen Ragusa, he was in there, Lenny and Squiggy, you know, those guys, you'd recognize those guys. Really, really cool, family-friendly show. Anyway, you know what, I was just listening when I saw that Cindy Williams had died. Laverne, man, that's a Penny Marshall, right? Absolutely the best director out there in Hollywood, tons of blockbusters, really talented, the other half. Anyway, you know what? I punched up the theme song from Laverne and Shirley. This is, it's sung by Cindy Greco. You know, it was written by Charles Fox and Laurie Maitland. And Making Our Dreams Come True. And I thought, you know what? This really is an FSHDer song.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8,
doing it our way. But I see both of them. We're making our dreams come true and we're going to do it our way. You know what? You know what? You don't have to agree with us. You know, go make your own damn pigs. Anyway. So, last thing I want to talk about, just, we started this so that we can make, accessible, research testing, FSHD research testing to everyone in the world, affordable testing. And guess what? The price of the, why don't you go find out, go to your other foundations and see what it's going to cost to have their free research testing, or they can even make it available anymore. Well, I bet they can't. You know what? This is, we're still doing it and we're going to keep doing it because people need it. Here's something I got. Here's what I got this week. Hello, my name is Igor. I live in an unrecognized republic between Ukraine and Moldova. What's that? You know, I was diagnosed with Landauzi-Dejerni. I'd like to know if this is correct and, check out my family, Google Translate. Okay. my response, of course, is that, yes, we can help you. Our testing is free and I will email you the results. My only concern is whether we can send a package by mail. What is your address and phone number, zip code? I mean, I'm not sure if you can send a package to the unrecognized territory between Ukraine and Moldova. But I punched up the address. He sent it to me. And look, not too far outside Odessa. And a lot of stuff going down there right now. You know what? But these people still want help. And you know what? We're going to get a package to them. We're going to help them. Here's someone else. Here's someone from the USA. My neurologist recommended the site to get testing as there are suspicions of FSHD. I've appealed to insurance for testing, but denied numerous times. That's right here in the U.S., okay? You don't have to go all around the world. Let's see, I got a few of these. What's this one? Suspected FSHD. However, my child, who is 12, has definitive features, but they were diagnosed with something else. Very limited access to testing in Canada. Oh, very limited access to testing in Canada? I thought that was our model of healthcare system. Due to my late father's challenges, no proper diagnosis, I thought this might be beneficial, okay, for scientific advances. Okay, so, you know, we're going to help somebody in Canada that's having some trouble. You know, we get these all the time, okay? Medical doctors. Hi, Dr. Jones. I have a patient who I'm trying to get FSHD testing for and came across your website. Cost is an issue for this patient, so I thought your testing would be a good option. Should I go ahead and have the patient request a kit through your website? Absolutely. You know, here's a medical doctor saying, you know what, because cost is an issue, because insurance ain't, again, from the U.S. Okay. Hi there. I got told you're able to pick up different illnesses and diseases from a saliva test. Can I request a quit, please? I've been in limbo for 15 years with a progressive illness that affects my muscles in my body. I'm trying to figure out if there's something going on. Absolutely. We're going to help you. No worries. No worries at all. We're here for everybody. You know what? And we're going to keep being here for everybody. Someone's got to be there, right? And we love it. Actually, it is a really rewarding thing to do. You know, it's something I never really anticipated, that I'm providing this service to people. It could be so, I mean, people thank us. You know, I'm thanking y'all for trusting us. We're doing our best. And just on that note, you know, some people are noticing that it's taking, and you might see this online, so you can help me out online. Help me out here. It is actually starting to take longer to get results back. We're pushing 4 to 6 weeks now on getting results back on the saliva test. You got to remember, it sometimes is in the mail to us for 2 weeks. The Postal Service sure as hell ain't what it used to be, okay? I mean, they must have hired Newman upon Newman, because they don't seem to deliver in the snow or the rain, or the sun, or the wind, or, well, anyway, it takes a long time for us to get the samples from you. We'll say that. And then, you know, we have so many. The queue, we must have 100 in the queue right now, right? We actually, last week, one day, we got 30 kits came into the lab in one day. Okay. In the week, we pushed almost 45 kits in the week that were returned. Okay. This doesn't count large projects that we're doing. We get batches of 30, 60, 70, sometimes from other countries where we have some research projects going on. And please just remember, we are a research lab doing a research test as a service at no cost to everybody. And I know you guys appreciate it. And I'm not trying to say appreciate it. I know you're in a hurry. I know you want to know. We're doing the best we can. Honestly, one thing that everyone could do, they could learn how to spit better, read some instructions, because, you know, about, I would say maybe 1 out of 20 comes back. We just hardly get any DNA. It's very complicated. You know, and the major cost for our testing is the saliva kit. And so I hate to have to send out a second kit to everybody. Or to anybody, actually, because it just doubles the cost of the testing. And we still do it. We don't charge anybody. But what ends up happening is I go into the lab myself and I troubleshoot these samples. Most of the time I can actually make them work. But now all of a sudden you might be waiting 2 months to get your results. You know, so I understand it's taking longer. The truth of it is we can do it in about a day and a half if we had to. If I really had to, I could do it in a day and a half, maybe 2 days, depending on what day of the week we get it. And so some of you are in a hurry for various reasons. I know everybody's actually wants to know, but if there's really a mad rush, really some reason, we had somebody who literally was on their deathbed due to cancer, and they wanted to know if they had FSHD because they wanted to die knowing whether or not their children could possibly have had FSHD and their sister had FSHD. So actually, I mean, this is a true story. That somebody, and you want to talk about rushing a test, because to give this person, let them die in peace, to know that they did not have FSHD, so their children are not going to have FSHD. And we were able to get them that test in time. We've had some people going in for surgeries. I had a guy who was in line for a heart transplant, and they were holding off on whether to find out whether or not he has FSHD, and they couldn't figure it out. Okay. You say, why are you coming to me? Research testing. These aren't clinically relevant. Well, you know, I don't know what they do with the results. Again, we give them a research test result. So we didn't actually tell this woman that her kids, she doesn't have FSHD. She didn't have the epigenetics consistent with FSHD, and she didn't seem to inherit the family chromosome. This dude looked waiting for the heart transplant. All we were able to do is show very clearly that he had mosaic epigenetics for FSHD1. And that they, if they were to do the proper type of clinically relevant testing and with a specific eye out for mosaic FSHD1 as opposed to classic FSHD1, that maybe they missed it and they'd be able to find it. And we were able to help this guy out. Okay, again, still do the clinical testing, but you know what? We're able to do that. No, there. So there are some time. These are types of legitimate time crunches, right? Everybody wants to know, but we're doing our best. So when people ask online and people complain, I know they're not really complaining. They're frustrated. We're doing our best. It's about 4 to 6 weeks. I'm going to put a video up on the MyFSHD website that addresses this. But I just appreciate if you're in some of these Facebook groups or online and people say it, you can give them real information. Say, Peter says it's about 4 to 6 weeks. Sorry. But you're always free to contact me. Actually, I never mind if you contact me. Honestly, when the machine runs and we run the next-gen sequencer, we get 60 to 70 results now at once. You know, it's going to take me 15 plus hours to write those reports. The people, I shouldn't say, right? Should I? But the people who email me and say, hey, do you have my results? And it happened to, I was like, I type them up right then. You know, it's like that. So sometimes you can wait an extra week for me to actually have time to write the reports, which I have to do. And I do, and we analyze that. And again, some people, if there's any question on the results, we repeat it. The last thing in the world I want to do, even though it's a research test, the last thing in the world I would ever want to do is give anybody back some incorrect information. So we're just incredibly careful. So you know what? In the grand scheme of things, a few extra days, a few extra weeks even, you know, it's still no cost. We can check everybody. You know what? And when you get your result, you're really going to want to get the proper clinical testing anyway. At least you'll have a good idea of what that, you won't be surprised at that result one way or the other. Because again, we're still remarkably accurate. All right. We're out of here, man. We still got Jagger. And, I don't know what you think about the new intro and exit. I actually asked Jagger, so I want more music with that. Listen, you know, Brad's talking, that's okay, but I want more music with that exit. Anyway, we're out of here. We'll be there. We'll try to pick up the pace on these things anyway. All right. See y'all.
Thank you for listening to the MyFSHD podcast, where we share with you the latest news and information on FSHD as we strive for a cure. Do you have a question for Peter? He'd love to hear from you. You can reach him at peterjones@med.unr.edu. Thank you for listening, and join us again next time for more news and information.